where Shelton comes first for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. You know that among my crusades is one lawn at a time. Now it's going to be one driveway at a time. And of course, it is always about trying to get our night sky back so that we are not killing all of our birds and nocturnal creatures that are completely befuddled and confused by what we've done to planet Earth. Joining us right now is Greg Katz, who is the CEO and steering committee co-chair of something called Smart Surfaces Coalition. He's written a book called Greening Our Built World. And Greg, I have to tell you, this couldn't be more timely because we are in the middle of a heat wave right now here in Connecticut that feels, I mean, just exhaustingly numbing already. It doesn't seem to break. We're not getting our typical 4:35 o'clock thunderstorm showers to get a respite and have our plants get a respite. We're continuing with a moderate drought that may get worse. And yesterday I was driving home from Manhattan myself in my little car, and it registered 103 degrees inside my car. In other words, telling me what the temperature was outside. And I don't know if you're familiar with the commuting roads leaving from Manhattan, but it's all asphalt for as far as the eye can see on the major Deegan Expressway with diesel trucks and everything else. And I was thinking about you, and I was thinking about why are we continuing to have roads built with so much petroleum that basically make everything worse? They make everything worse. So thank you so much for coming on today. I hope you're going to give us an education. Greg Katz, welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show.
Lisa, thank you so much. It's great to be on with you, and thank you for all that you do. I do know there's expressways, and it is crazy that we decide to put down surfaces which are so dark. They absorb more than 90% of the sunlight, and that re-radiates as heat, and it bakes everybody around us. And because our dark surfaces, you know, is what we choose to put on our cities. Our cities now are 8 to 10 degrees hotter. It's called the urban heat island effect. And as you say, with this kind of temperature added on top of that additional urban heat island effect in the cities, many cities are becoming unlivable in the summer.
Urban heat island effect. You know, that's so interesting. Years ago, in my other life, Greg, I'm a judge, and in the afternoons, I'm a probate judge, and people that are older always say to me, you have court in the summer, because they remember before air conditioning a time when public buildings always closed and there were no courts in the summer. And before we had AC, I think all of our cities were heat islands and everybody realized they had to escape. But we fooled ourselves because of our air conditioning in thinking that we've created habitable spaces.
Yeah, it's so true. And that air conditioning, I mean, it puts heat inside rooms, but it puts cooling inside rooms, but it dumps heat outside. There have been studies of cities showing that if you add a lot of air conditioning, you can actually heat up the city by 2 degrees.
Really?
Which is quite a lot. And of course, those air conditioning units all use a lot of power, so you have to build power stations to provide that. And they use as coolant what are called HCFCs, and those are greenhouse gases and that leak. And so we're in this kind of weird situation where it's projected we're adding billions of air conditioning units in the next few decades. But if we do that, it will accelerate global warming. So the basic challenge we have to recognize and deal with is either we air condition our own private homes and offices, or we do citywide cooling. And if we take the first path, it accelerates warming and makes cities hotter. Our public spaces become less attractive because all this heat and noise. The second pathway, which is citywide cooling, which you alluded to in the introduction, turns out it's much more cost effective, and you can make cities much cooler while the world gets hotter. And a lot of people then don't have to buy more air conditioning, don't have to stay inside all summer.
How do we do this, Greg Katz? How do we do citywide cooling? How do we begin one driveway at a time, one street at a time? What do we do?
Yeah, there Well, the way cities have thought about this is they say we are going to do lowest first cost, and that's typically, you know, tarmac and pavement and dark surfaces. But if you take a step back and look at all the costs and benefits, it becomes, and our partners include the American Institute of Architects, 40 partners, American Public Health Association, the World Cement Association, this broad industry health, NGO, set of organizations, Graduate School of Public Health at Harvard. We quantify all of the benefits in detail and then work with cities to develop highly accurate plans of the entire city surface and then help them model what the implications are. If you take a tarmac road that you're describing and you make it very reflective, or you make a roof reflective, or you add more trees, or you add more bioswales. And what cities, even innovative cities like New York, they do one thing at a time. They will,
yes,
you know, they'll take roofs, flat roofs, and they'll make them lighter. Well, that's good, but it doesn't do much. It's like asking a painter to paint a painting with one color. It doesn't work very well. So the answer to your question is you want to think about all the surfaces of the city as one integrated cooling strategy, and you want to apply smart surfaces across that entire city. You can end up making people feel 10 to 15 degrees cooler in the summer. That's the difference between being stuck inside all summer and being outdoors, enjoying the outdoors, exercising, and all the good things that goes with the ability to be outdoors during the summer.
Well, it's also the difference between plants that die and plants that survive. I planted 4 trees this April, and they're starting to not survive. And I've never, ever seen such lack of water and such heat here in Connecticut before. I mean, they're in trouble, these trees.
Yeah, I actually grew up in Connecticut, and it's a state that has some of the most beautiful trees for all four seasons. You know, we do this really crazy thing. God kind of gives us rain and gives us sun. And the question is, what do we do with it? Or nature gives it to us. And the answer is, what we do is we absorb all that sunlight and heat that we don't want and heat up our buildings, causing heat deaths and higher temperature. We take all that water with impervious surfaces, and then it runs off and causes flooding. And you don't have
Even collect it. We get these huge thunderstorms every now and then, and it just runs away. I feel the same way, Greg. I'm like, well, what just happened? What just happened? We just lost all that water.
Yes, exactly right. So the adoption of porous surfaces and bioswales, you think about a driveway or a parking lot, why should that be dark and impervious? Why can't it be, you know, lattice work with grass growing through it?
Exactly.
Why can't it be light-colored pavers where the rain filters through and the light is reflected back? Lisa, this whole thing about light reflecting back, I want to focus on for a moment because it's really interesting. The reason climatologists are freaking out about what's going on in the North Pole is that ice reflects sunlight back into space. But as it warms, ice and snow turns into water, and water absorbs 95% of the incoming sunlight as heat and heats up the water, which accelerates ice loss. So that feedback loop really scares climatologists. And what we're doing with the cities that we're working with is we're helping them double their reflectivity. So a lot more light, instead of coming in as sunlight and heating up the city, gets bounced back into space. And that heat leaves the atmosphere. It's literally global cooling. And we can do that for every city now.
We're chatting with Greg Katz, who is a co-chair of something called the Smart Surfaces Coalition. You alluded earlier to who this coalition is. Tell us a little bit about who formed this and how people decided that it needed to happen.
We formed about 4 years ago. It was a set of organizations, the American Institute of Architects, the American Public Health Association, the American Planning Association, Graduate School of Public Health at Harvard, the World Cement Association, 40 organizations, National League of Cities, which is the largest city group in the country. And the organizations, we all realized we had a shared understanding, which is that, as you've said, Lisa, the surface choices we make mean that we're much hotter and you get much more flooding. And then that's just dumb. And so that even sophisticated cities don't think about all their surfaces together. They're like, oh, let's do a bit of solar, or let's add, you know, cool paint to roofs. But so that this set of organizations, 40 organizations, share an understanding that cities need to rethink their surfaces and use them all to cool cities and to make them more healthy and more reflective and manage water better. And that smart surfaces strategy, citywide cooling and management of surfaces, that's the single shared objective of all these organizations. Now, every organization has their own interest. So the health organizations that are partners, they care about the health. Some organizations care about climate. Others care about equity. Others care about energy. But there's this common opportunity through intelligent design and management of city surfaces to achieve a bunch of different objectives: protecting tourism, protecting jobs, protecting health, addressing equity, reducing climate change. So that's really the shared vision of these organizations. And we our intent is within 10 years that cities globally adopt smart surfaces as the global design norm. We're starting in the U.S. and India.
We have so much work to do. Greg Katz, can you stay with us? We're going to be right back. I want to continue to talk about this. We're chatting with Greg Katz, the CEO and steering committee co-chair of Smart Surfaces Coalition, 203-333-9422. We'll be right back.
From Norwalk to New Canaan, from Monroe to Milford, Fairfield County listens to The Lisa Wexler Show on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
And welcome back. We are chatting with Greg Katz, and we're talking about smart surfaces. Greg, I wanted to ask you something. What would you like our roads to be composed of that's better than what we do right now? Our highways, our roads, where cars and trucks have to travel. What should we be doing?
Well, it depends on the road surface. For parking lots and less used residential roads, you can add a resurfacing. It costs about 75 cents a square foot. It will triple the reflectivity. What's interesting is that a very dark road gets super hot, as we know,
yes,
which means it expands, and at night it cools down and contracts, and the next
right.
day it expands. So that expansion contraction leads to cracking, and
I know.
Means that the road life is much shorter. And so just based on life cycle cost for those surfaces, it's less expensive to have more reflective surfaces.
But what does that mean? In other words, I have a street outside my house. The next time they pave it, they shouldn't pave it with asphalt. What should they pave it with?
There's an initiative that we've raised funding for. It's a smart surfaces initiative. There are a dozen cities now resurfacing residential roads by putting down a relatively thick coat of highly reflective engineered material. Bunch of different big companies like GAF provide this, and it increases the reflectivity. So it goes from being black to gray. You're reflecting back about 35% of the sunlight instead of 10 to 12%. And you can actually measure large reductions in road temperature, but also 1 to 2 degrees temperature reduction in nearby homes. So that's strategy
that
extends the surface life, reduces the heat, reduces energy bills, and saves taxpayers money.
Now, I know you're talking, and you're only 4 years old, and you're focusing on big cities, but don't you think Connecticut is a state, for example, of 169 towns with a few big cities, a handful, but many, many more towns? Don't you think you want to get in front of mayors and first selectmen? Like Westport, the town that I am proud to be a resident of for over 30 years. We are a community that prides ourselves on green this and green that. We would probably be very open to hearing from you. Are you making presentations like that, one town, one city at a time?
At this point, our primary work is with larger cities, so like Baltimore, Stockton, Philadelphia, El Paso, London, Bhopal in India. But
wow.
Our partners, like the National League of Cities, have thousands of cities and towns as members. And we would be delighted to work with a smaller city like a Bridgeport or your city to rethink surfaces. The way that you know, city planners are good people who want to do the right thing. The problem is when it comes to surfaces, they're operating blind. They don't know what the surface albedo is. They don't know what the technical options are. They are not able to quantify the implications for things like energy bills or water runoff or health. That's our role as a technical organization, is to provide the tools and the data, the analytic engine, and the support for cities to think through their future over the next 20 or 30 years by imagining a very different surface strategy, one that emphasizes reflectivity, porosity, shade, cooling, trees, and integrated strategies where you're putting solar PV on a reflective roof, which increases electricity output and makes solar even more cost effective. When I put solar on my home 9 years ago, it meant that the sun wasn't hitting the roof, so my roof and building didn't get as hot, so my air conditioning bill went down. That kind of benefit people don't often understand, and we're able to help cities quantify that rigorously and make very different systematic choices for how they manage all their surfaces. So would love to work in your city to do that.
I would love to connect you with somebody who would really give you an open mind. One of our listeners is asking me to ask you about our driveways. Do you want to see us mostly do gravel, pebbles? If we are going to do asphalt, what are we going to put on our driveways?
Yeah, it's a great question. Driveways don't get driven on very much, maybe once or two or three times a day. So they don't need to be load-bearing. You want a surface that doesn't heat up your home and doesn't cause water runoff. So gravel is great, or you can get plastic lattice structures with grass growing through it, or you can get light-colored concrete pavers where the water runs through that. Those sorts of strategies reduce runoff, reduce heat, and are frankly more attractive, and it's a really smart alternative.
They are prettier. They are. It's much prettier. I love my gravel driveway. And I stood on my head. I insisted with my husband when we were renovating our house about 10 years ago that we do gravel. And because Bill was pretty traditional, he wanted his driveway. But you know what I said to him? Honey, we have this little bend in the driveway. And as you said earlier, Greg, every winter, summer, spring, it was cracking. It was driving Bill nuts. Every second or third year, he was repaving it. I said, forget about it. We're going to put gravel over it. No one's going to notice the difference. And all the water's going to stay inside, and not run off. And I'm very happy with that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And is your husband happy with the results?
He is, because every few years, he orders, you know, another couple of tons of stones. And that's the end of it. No big deal. Much cheaper. It's much cheaper, by the way, to have gravel than it is to have an asphalt driveway. I mean, it's much cheaper.
And it's nice when we're kind of over the barrel, as it were, with Russian and oil, to not be using products like tarmac that's made in part with oil.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So one streetscape, one rooftop at a time. We have this $369 billion bill that's just been passed, that's been heralded, at least it was passed in the Senate, hasn't been signed off yet, but it's been heralded as something that will take us forward in terms of climate change. Greg Katz, have you had a chance to look at this, and what should we know about it that will be useful for us?
Yeah, it's a great bill. It's going to reduce the cost of medications, and it's going to do some other great things, but the core of it is really accelerating a transition to clean energy. And that's important because it means we're less dependent on oil. It's important because it creates a lot more jobs. It's important because it's going to affect the quality of life for our children and grandchildren. And, you know, some of the specifics are when I bought solar, for example, on our home 9 years ago, it cost about $32,000, and there are federal rebates and stuff. Today, the same, actually better equipment would cost about $22,000. This would mean that for people on the edge, people without so much money, that the solar decision would be a very attractive one financially. Similarly, ground source heat pumps, which use the natural heat, the temperature in the earth, to provide about half the cooling for a home and half the heating for a home. There's a really good subsidy in this for people who want to adopt ground source heat pumps. And what's been great, and I've invested in 65 companies. I was managing director of the first large private equity firm investing in clean technology. In the last 10 years, all these technologies have really scaled up. So there's a lot of very substantial manufacturers, very long track record of performance, and the costs have come down. And what this bill really does is say we're at an inflection point where these U.S.-made, mostly, technologies are now available and viable for everybody, people without much money, people living in, you know, in residential units where they worry about not just paying the mortgage, but their energy bills and their water bills. And here's a strategy to allow people to adopt technology to cut those energy bills a lot and to become more self-sufficient.
That's called a ground source heat pump?
Yeah, and basically what happens is the outdoor air might be 90 during the summer. So what you're doing is you're using the relative cool of the ground and the groundwater, which is about 60 degrees, to pre-cool. And in the winter, when it's cold in Connecticut, could be 20 degrees. You're up in Connecticut. Rather than using your outside air, you're basically circulating fluid through the ground, raising that temperature to 60 degrees. So you only need to add a little more heat to get up to 80 or 85 degrees to warm your home. So it's just smart design and elegant design to use available resources in nature, like wind and sun and the temperature, the stable temperature within the ground, to provide heating and cooling for ourselves that don't have these terrible secondary effects like climate change and smog and that kind of thing.
It's going to be a great opportunity for people who are smart enough to take advantage of it, to start these companies, to start to offer them to the consumer, because we're all just getting educated now. I mean, I'm learning about this now for you from the first time, so I'll need to learn about it another 5 or 10 times before I'll make an investment and actually do it. You know what I mean? So it's a real opportunity.
Yeah.
It's a real opportunity.
It's also what I say to young people, it's a great field to get into because the jobs are really good. They're dispersed.
Yeah.
Is a pathway into management, and young people are really ethical. They're concerned about climate. Here's a way to both do well and to do good. From a more macro perspective, this is on a net basis going to create a lot of jobs. It'll mean that our companies and our towns are more competitive as their energy bills go down and the temperature comes down. So it's just a win-win-win for everybody. And so it's a very exciting next step for the U.S. economy and this transition that we have to a lower carbon society.
So let me ask you this. We're chatting with Greg Katz. I know that there are a lot of people who listen to our show who are in positions of leadership and influence, first and second selectmen's and mayors around our community who are listening right now. If they want to find out more about this, if they want to meet with you or someone in your organization to consult with making some broad policy changes or have their engineering department call you, how would they do that?
Go online to the Smart Surfaces Coalition, and our contact information is there. We're an NGO, a 501c3, so everything we do, we put out in the public domain. If you go to our website, you'll see there are a lot of free resources and studies. And, you know, we'd love to find a city to work with in Connecticut. It could be a city or it could be a larger region to map out a much cooler strategy going forward.
We're definitely going to need it. We're short on water. We're high on heat. I'm worried that people are not going to be able to afford their own electric bills come the winter. I'm concerned about all of this. We have a monopolistic Eversource, which has given us problems, and they own the water supply called Aquarian as well. And so there's a lot of moving parts here. Do you know Marissa Gillette, our chairwoman of PURA, the Public Utility Regulatory Agency? She comes on our show once a month. She's terrific, actually. And she comes on our show once a month to talk about this. So maybe I could connect you offline. She would be a really good person to talk to.
That would be wonderful. Let me mention one anecdote. We have an electric car we switched recently. And in June, our electric bill to power our home and our car because of solar was a grand total of $8.
I can't even stand it. All right. Well, we'll have to follow you. Greg Katz, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Thanks for giving us hope.
Lisa, thank you so much. Great to speak with you.
We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show.